All right, we'll go ahead and get started. We are in Joshua chapter 22, Joshua 22 tonight, which is going to be a really, really good chapter to study. So we'll have a lot of, I think, practical things to talk about and discuss with one another. So up to this point in Joshua, and by the way, it's good to have all you couples back in here. We've missed you in the class. So up to this point in Joshua, they have been getting ready to conquer the land, and then they defeat Jericho, and then they eventually defeat the city of Ai, and then they basically conquer the rest of Canaan. And what Michael covered last week was they divided out the land to where all the tribes would be located. And so that is all done, including the cities for the Levites. And now it is finally time for Reuben, Gad, and half of Manasseh to go beyond the Jordan, to the right or the east, whichever you prefer, of the Jordan. So this is going to be a really helpful discussion, I think. They decide to build an altar that is right next to the Jordan, which offends the other 9.5 tribes. And basically, this chapter is about how to resolve conflict. And these tribes do a really good job, and I think a really helpful things to think about and talk about, and how we can resolve conflicts that arrive in our life. So I plan on just kind of going through this whole chapter, and then at the end we're going to kind of do a lot of kind of looking at the chapter again and seeing how did they resolve the issues that came up in this chapter. So we'll kind of go that route this evening. So Joshua chapter 22, if you are not there yet, in verses 1 through 9, they are at Shiloh, and everyone is kind of saying their goodbyes to these 2.5 tribes. So verses 1 through 5, basically Joshua telling Reuben, Gad, and half of Manasseh his goodbye. So you can kind of think of this as a parent who is about to send their child away, or their 2.5 children away, if it works that way. So that's what we have going on here. It says, "You have kept all that Moses commanded you." So just so we're on the same page, what did Moses tell these 2.5 tribes they had to do? And what's the situation going on?
Their men of war had to continue to fight until essentially the major battles were over. They still had to clear everybody out.
Right.
But that was going to be up to the
chief. Good. So they conquered kind of the east side of the Jordan, Gilead. And Reuben and Gad and half of Manasseh said, "This is wonderful land. This would be great land for our animals and to raise families. So can we have this land?" And so Moses and God basically tell them, "That's fine. However, on one condition, that you help your brothers fight and clear out the land of Canaan." And so what ended up happening was their families, their children, their wives, and their livestock all stayed in Gilead while all the men of war helped their brothers clear out Canaan, the promised land. So in verses 1 through 3, you've done that. And for a more extensive study on that, you can look at Numbers chapter 32. It's kind of all about that situation. And God has given, verse 4, God has given rest to your brothers. Joshua is clear about who needs to get the credit, right? It's not, "You have done a great job in helping your brothers clear out the land." No, God has cleared out the land. So it really focuses on them, and we need to remember that as well, is to always give God the glory and never kind of tell someone, this is how great you are, thanks for all you've done. Well, maybe do what Paul does so often. I thank God for you. And so that'd be a good thing to do, and it helps the other person. Latter part of verse 4, you can now return to your tents, return to your land. They had already built the sheepfolds, the livestock, the cities, and now you can go back and be with your wives and children. I don't know how long it had been since they had been with their families. I would guess at least a year or two for them clearing out the land, but that's a boneheaded guess on my part. But it had been a while, risking their lives. And I love verse 5 of Joshua 22. It says, "Only be careful to observe the commandment and the law which Moses, the servant of the Lord, commanded you, to love the Lord your God and to walk in His ways and keep His commandments and to hold fast to Him and serve Him with all your heart and with all your soul." This is essentially Joshua's one verse command on how they need to live the rest of their lives, right? You go back, you make sure that you do this. What does this verse remind you of? What does it sound similar to? He's a lot less long-winded than Moses, right? But yeah, a lot of things in Deuteronomy. Be careful to do what God has commanded you. That comes up a lot of times. What else does this sound like? Maybe it's just me.
Jesus' first commandment. He said the first greatest commandment.
Absolutely. Yeah. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength. This is the greatest command. That's essentially what Joshua is telling them here. Be careful to observe, and you love the Lord, you walk in His ways, you keep His commandments, you hold fast to Him, and you serve Him with everything that you have. And so this is kind of his farewell speech. He's going to be a little bit more like Moses in chapter 23 and 24. He's going to make it a lot more than one verse, telling them what they need to do. But this is what you need to do with the rest of your life. Really helpful verse just to kind of zero in on and look at all the details in that. But Joshua blessed them in verse 6 and sent them back to their homes. So verses 7 and 8, and maybe you can help me understand this better. So when you look at 7 and 8 and they are dividing the spoil, right, with their brothers, with the other tribes, is he talking to the half tribe of Manasseh, or is he talking to all 2.5 tribes? I don't think it makes much of a difference. Seems to me he's talking to the 2.5 tribes that I want you to divide all the spoil that we have collected in our campaign in Canaan and divide that among yourselves. So they do that, and they you know, silver, gold, bronze, iron, very much clothes. That's kind of the emphasis that you see in that verse, right? Very much a great number. What is that emphasizing? Wealth. What else? Maybe I need better questions. It seems how blessed they are and what God has provided for them, right? How are they able to have all this spoil? And well, it's because of the Lord and His mercy and kindness to all of them. So they depart from Shiloh and head to their home. Verse 10 is kind of the central verse of this entire chapter. What happens in verse 10 The rest of the chapter kind of points to this. So Reuben, Gad, and half of Manasseh build a large altar, so large enough that you can see it from a long distance away. It was right there by the Jordan, so you could see it. It's kind of undetermined whether it was on the Israel side or their side. We don't know exactly. But they're right by the Jordan. And it seems to be a replica of the altar to the Lord. And we read kind of later on in this chapter. Now I know you've already read on. but pretend that you haven't. What do you think about what they do in verse 10? Would you have any concerns about what they're doing? Of building an altar. Okay, so that's really the mindset of the 9.5 tribes. Is why in the world are you building an altar if you're not going to use the altar, right? That makes sense. And if you're using that altar, is that okay? Well, we already have an altar, right? We are at the tabernacle. So this would raise a lot of red flags, as it does. And so they are trying to do this, and the other 9.5 tribes find out about it, and they're like, what in the world? How quickly you have turned against God in building this altar. I mean, we said goodbye yesterday, and now you're building this grandioso altar to another god, is their suspicion. So you see that initial reaction there in verses 11 and 12. And what does Israel plan on doing? Let's take them out. now, now we have to clear the east side of the Jordan again. But this time it's going to be our brothers. So they're ready to fight. And do you think they're tired of fighting at this point? So the fact that they are ready to fight, what do you think about their response in verses 11 and 12? You think that's a good response? Yes.
To me, this is like the highlight for them, where I think this is them being careful to obey the Lord as best they can. So this seems like the pinnacle of their righteousness.
Yes.
Good.
So if their assumption, and their assumption is they built this altar to serve other gods, if that assumption is correct, would they be doing the right thing? Absolutely, right? You should serve God only, and if anyone serves another god, you need to go to that brother or sister and help them turn back to the Lord. So I really appreciate the 9.5 tribe zeal for the Lord. They just got through fighting with these brothers. They divided the spoil with them. They've gone through a lot together. They're family, and yet it doesn't matter. If you're not going to serve the Lord, we need to make things right.
Right. They're ready to take these 2.5 tribes down because of this act.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Jeroboam created all kinds of sin for the entirety of Israel's existence. They were fined by doing that.
It's still 1,000 years later.
Oh, gracious, you would ask that.
It's still a long time after that.
Yeah.
Now you're 20 years.
what is it? I think 300. I think so. What's that? Yeah, so let's see. I can't do math that quick in my head, but
certainly over 200.
Yes. Oh, for sure. Right. So 1,500 is Moses. And then, so we're, 14 maybe now. And then Israel, the start is 931. So you do the math there. 500? Okay. There we go. Everyone good with 500? That's a good round number, right? Oh, about 500. Yeah. Yes. So, absolutely. So you see verses 13 and 14, Israel sends Phinehas. What do we know about Phinehas? What good thing did Mr. Phinehas do? You remember? His zeal for the Lord? Yes. Yes, yes. So Numbers 25, the sin of Peor. And they were committing harlotry against the Lord. And Phinehas goes in the tent and drives a spear right through the man and the woman. And so that's what stopped that plague, by the way. So you see in the Bible, it says the zeal of Phinehas. And that's what you see here as well. So these men... we got 10 men, right? 10 chiefs from each of these tribes. So you'd have, I guess, one man for East Manasseh and one man for West Manasseh. So they got these 10 men, probably well respected to be the leaders of the tribes, and they go to talk to these 2.5 tribes. So let's look at their speech, verses 15 to 20, and I'll just kind of highlight some things here. They start out by saying, this says the whole congregation of Israel. So this is not just 10 people's or 11 people's opinion. This is the opinion, this is the view of the entire nation, what we're about to say. In verse 16, they come out very strong in their language and say, why are you rebelling against God? What is this unfaithful act you are committing against God? You are turning away from God by building an altar. You are rebelling against God. So they don't pull any punches. They don't beat around the bush, right? They're just straight. This is what we see that's wrong, and we're calling you out. And then verse 17 and 18, they bring up the sin, kind of what happened in Peor, or however you say that, with Phinehas in Numbers 25. You remember what happened? Did you not learn from Peor, where the women of Moab invited Israel to harlotry and worshiping their gods, and they just said, yeah, let's do that, and they were easily swayed, and God killed 24,000 Israelites because we did that. And so you kind of see the parallel here. Now you are doing the same thing, right? You are worshiping these other gods based on their assumption in verse 16. He said, did you not learn? That's semi-recent history that you should have learned not to do that. And then he says, if you rebel against God today, what's going to happen tomorrow? Who is he going to go after? All of us, right? So it's not like, well, y'all can sin and that's your decision. No, they know if they sin, it's going to affect everybody. So if the land of Gilead, they kind of give them an out. If the land of Gilead is unclean, you don't like it, and just kind of a bad influence over there, then hey, just come back over. We'll give you land. You can settle here. So they give them that option. They just say again, do not rebel against God by building an altar for yourselves. And then they bring up another historical event that would be much more recent, is the sin of Achan. So how does the sin of Achan apply to what they're doing? What would be some similarities?
In the fact that they're disobeying.
Yes. Yes. Exactly. Yeah, so I think that's what he's pointing out here is, look, one man sinned. Who did God punish? Not just Achan and his family, but there were Israelites that died because of that. There was sin in the camp, and God did not go with them to Ai, to conquer Ai, and they got destroyed, right? So again, they bring up, you need to learn from these things that this your sin not only affects you, but it affects us as well. So that's why we're coming to you. In verses 21 to 29, they respond there in verse 22 by saying, "The mighty one God, the Lord. The mighty one God, the Lord." So what do you think about how they start? Why would they repeat that twice? Maybe so. So they have been accused of rebelling against God, right? And the first thing out of their mouth is the mighty one, God, the Lord. The Lord, there's Yahweh, his name. And so, no, we have not rebelled against God. We're not serving other gods. This is the mighty God. This is Yahweh. How in the world could we not serve him? I think is the idea. So we're not turning aside. We're not rebelling against God. So he says, now let Israel know. God knows our hearts, right? God knows what's going on. Now we need to explain it to you. So this is their spiel. Verse 23, what stands out to you in that verse? Yes. If we have sinned against God, don't save us. let God handle us. And remember, I think this goes back to part of their speech where they said, look, if you don't like it over there, just come over here and live with us in Canaan, the promised land. But he said, if you're not... if we're rebelling against God, and that's why we built this altar, is to serve other gods, don't save us. Don't give us an out. Let God punish us for that. Because we don't deserve any mercy if that's what we've done. The reason, verse 24 to 28, this is the reason why we have built the altar. So we are our fear. Oh, let me instead of me reading. What reason do they give, or what, I'll say, what reasons do they give as to why they built the altar? What do you see in verses 24 to 28? Yes, yes, so it says that. We want this to be a witness, right? And at the end of the chapter, that's what they name the altar. this altar is named Witness. So it's a witness. And who are they worried about? Yes.
Yeah, that's where I was going to go.
Good.
They're not worried about anybody that's living today.
Right.
Basically, they're worried about the descendants of the people on the west side. Right now, you're allowing all of us to come over there. But God put this river in between us, and you're the next generation behind you.
Yes.
So that's their excuse. That's who they're worried about.
Absolutely. So they're trying to look ahead And okay, let's see our children, maybe our grandchildren, our great-grandchildren, and they could have this kind of territorial possession of it. And here comes these 2.5 tribes that it was their decision, right, to live over there. That was not the promised land. And now they want to come join us and worship God. So you could kind of see maybe that mindset, and it's like, we don't want that. We want to make it very clear that we are still one nation and we all worship the mighty God, the Lord, right? And so this is very thinking ahead about the next generations that come after them. So we built this as a witness. Verse 28, if they were to say, you have no portion in the Lord, so that's what they're worried about, right? Then what would be the response? If 100 years from now or 50 years from now, the 9.5 tribes tell the 2.5 tribes, you have no portion in the Lord because you're not living in the promised land. What would be the answer?
Look at this
monument. Absolutely. So this altar, witness, would abolish that claim. And so we are trying to make it clear today that we are one. I know we're one now, but I want us to be one always. And our generations always come over, always worship the Lord together as He has told us to do. So verse 29 kind of sums it all up. Far be it from us to rebel and turn away from God by offering anything on this altar. So yes, we built an altar, but we don't plan on using it, right? That makes sense? So this is just kind of a statue, I guess you could say. This is an altar, but we're not going to use it. This is a witness. This is kind of like the 12 stones, right, that they stacked up at the beginning of Joshua. This is a reminder what God did as we crossed the Jordan to get into the promised land. Well, this is a reminder that we all worship the same God, and we're all one, and there's no division, even though a river kind of divides us at this point. Does that make sense? Any thoughts or comments through, what is that, verse 29? Yes, ma'am.
I can appreciate the zeal that the children of Israel had. It seems to me, however, that they went about it all the wrong way. And I know that the scriptures don't criticize the way they went about it. But if you make an application to us today,
right,
let's imagine this group of God's people approaching this group of God's people.
Right.
We're getting our warriors ready. We're going to fight them. And by the way, after we're assembled for war, we'll ask them in a very accusatory tone what they're doing.
So I don't know if they're assembled for war yet. This is just the 11 guys coming over into the... They're ready.
It says they had assembled, you know, it said that they had gathered at Shiloh.
Yes.
To make war. So the
yes.
warriors are there.
Yes.
And now
they're ready to fight.
They're ready to fight. And so now rather than going in and saying, so what's going on here? We thought we all loved the Lord. We all, what's with this altar?
Right.
They just go in making accusation after accusation.
Yeah.
And that was not the right way to do that.
Yeah. Good. And we'll talk a lot about that. Kind of the way they went about it, what's a good way to do it.
I don't want to take away from the zeal.
Right.
The zeal was good.
Yes.
But there are very zealous men who split churches today.
For sure.
Because of handling things in a very unwise,
right,
aggressive way, when if they had just sent the people over to talk to them to begin with and said, hey, what's going on, none of this would have happened. Because they agreed with the report.
Yes.
They thought the report was
right.
Good. After they heard it, they went, okay, that makes sense.
Yes.
And everything was good.
Yes.
But it caused a lot of unnecessary angst because they didn't approach it the way, of course, I understand it's the Old Testament.
Sure.
It's not the way Christ tells us to approach things.
Good.
That's all.
Adam?
Well, I mean, I also struggle to be complimentary of pretty much anything that happened from the both that assembled at Shiloh, partly because in the 9 chapters we studied last week, every one of those
Right.
They're going to have problem after problem after problem because they focus apparently on going to fight against their brethren a lot more than they focus on doing what God actually told them to do, which was clear the land, and instead they had a few hundred years of problems in Judges because
right.
of all those people they left.
Yeah.
It caused problems like this.
Yes. Yes. Miss Julie. Yes. Trying to find where it says God did everything he promised and giving them the land, and then I kind of agree where the period of the judges, they kind of broke the backbone of Canaan, and then they go into their different territories and try to get out the people in that territory.
Chapter 21, verse 43.
Okay, 21. Good, thank you. I knew it's the end of a chapter. Thank you. Yes.
They were ready to fight their own brethren, but they weren't ready to obey that. So, I mean, even if it was still in peace, they still
didn't. They should, yeah, they didn't do what they were supposed to do, for sure. Let's finish the chapter, then we'll get more into this good discussion. So, verse 30 and 31, you see the explanation of why they built the altar. It was pleasing to them, they understood. And Phinehas kind of gives them a speech in verse 31. We know that the Lord is in our midst. So you have delivered the sons of Israel from the hand of God. So the idea of the Lord being in our midst, it made me think of Achan, right? Was the Lord in their midst when they went to Ai, try to battle? No, because there was sin, right? So they see, okay, there's no sin here. And so the Lord is in our midst. And notice what they said in verse 31, you have delivered the sons of Israel from the hand of God. So how did these 2.5 tribes deliver Israel from the hand of God? Yes. That's my take. That's my take of what Israel was planning to do at the beginning of the chapter is, let's kill them, right? Let's go to war with them. And who would God be on the side of? The 9.5 or the 2.5? Seemed like the 2.5, right? Because there was no sin, and then it was all assumption, it was all accusation on the 9.5 tribe, but they went and they asked questions and they said, "What, we want to hear your side of this." And because they did that, you have delivered Israel from the hand of God. So I think that's impressive and a key point. And so verse 32 to 34, the conflict is resolved. Phinehas and the heads, they go back to Israel at Shiloh, and they tell Israel, and Israel's reaction is, it pleased them, they blessed God, and this was no longer an issue. Right? They didn't even bring it up anymore. And the 2.5 tribes named the altar witness for this. Yes, sir. It absolutely.
On both sides.
Yes.
It seems like really the 2.5 tribes shouldn't have started this without communicating. And it would save a lot of trouble.
Right. So I wondered that if they had this plan all along, or could it be that they kind of got to the Jordan and they just kind of thought of it at that moment? It's unclear. But I agree, if they did have this plan, this is what we're going to do, then Go ahead and tell that to everyone. This is what we're planning on doing. And then this would have saved us verses 11 through whatever of this chapter. Let's break down kind of how to resolve a conflict with the time we have left. So in this story, the point of conflict, of course, is the altar. And so Israel hears about this, and then they make an assumption. Now, this assumption, was it logical? Was their assumption logical? Yes. Was their assumption true? No. That's important. So, just because you hear something or see something, you may jump to a conclusion that makes a whole lot of sense, but it's still an assumption, right? I thought about giving examples, and this may muddy the waters, but we're not against muddying waters. So let's think about you see a married Christian man with another woman who is not his wife at a restaurant. Now, maybe, and how they're acting, laughing, and carrying on, and you don't know who this other woman is, and you may make an assumption. Well, what assumption could you make on that? Okay. You could jump to that. What's that?
It's a business dinner.
Okay. Maybe this is a business dinner.
Sister.
What's that?
It's a sister.
Could be a sister, yes. So what can happen is we can make all of these assumptions on what's going on. And then I really, even though your conclusions, your assumptions may be logical, let's see. So in this story, they want to resolve this assumption, right? They want to get to what is really going on. And you know what I struggle with, and I would dare say others struggle with, is do you enjoy conflict? I'm one that does not. I do not like conflict. So I need to work on that, right? Because if I see someone and they're kind of in a situation, they're doesn't look good, right, at best, I can say, man, I wish I wouldn't have seen that. And I just go about my day and I never bring it up. You know what I appreciate about these 9.5 tribes is they are willing to resolve conflict. They're willing to go to the person and say, let's work this out. And how many times do we just let it go? Maybe pray for the best. But we need to be proactive. So if we love someone like we should, we'll go to them. Right. Go ahead. Good.
I know we hear about that business. We hear a lot of places. The CEO of Pepsi Cola actually was the originator of that statement, apparently.
Good.
And she said, no matter what the situation, assume positive intent.
Yes.
You'll be amazed at how it changes your perspective on
yes.
the situation.
Absolutely. It changes how you go to them.
And I think you can start there.
Yes.
With whatever you're going to do next.
Absolutely. Correct. Absolutely. Yes, very good. Yes, ma'am.
And what Chip's talking about is actually the opposite of evil surmising, which is really easy for us to slip into.
Yeah. Yes.
Which is what gossip is.
Very critical. Yes.
Gossip is always looking at the negative side of it.
Okay. So that's my next point. And looking at what do these 9.5 tribes do well? One thing that I see they do well is they went right to the 2.5 tribes.
They gathered for a war.
And then they, okay, okay. Okay.
And you don't think the 2.5 tribes knew that?
The only thing you have to do to know if an altar is in use is go smell it. You can tell if there's been a fire in it. You can tell if there's been sacrifices in it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. See what's going on over there and see if there's any animals alive or dead and come back and say, you know what, I don't think they're using that. I don't think anything's going on over there. Instead, they gathered for war at Shiloh and they're like, I guess we should send some guys that they can talk to them.
So, I don't know. I have a different take. Yes, sir.
Well, I was going to say, maybe we should assume some positive intent on their behalf also. Shiloh is over 20 miles away from where this meeting happened, so I'm not sure that the other two tribes were aware that they were gathered. Two, if we're using Achan as an example here, if this really is with the intent to not be following God, they're going to handle that swiftly. So I think that might be another way to think about.
Yeah, they're a little scarred from previous encounters where
sure.
people died.
Yes. Yeah. Good. Well, it's good. Good discussion. And you can take, I think that's helpful. Look at this. So my point is instead of, maybe you see something and don't go tell other people and say, oh, you won't believe what so-and-so did, what I saw them do. And then, man, that just no good at all. Go to the person that can actually solve the situation. That's what they do here. Second thing, they came to resolve the problem before fighting them. I think that's a positive. Thirdly, they tell them what their problem is with what they have done. Now, they assume the worst, right? Probably better to assume the best. May have gone well. Then we'll talk about the other side, what the 2.5 tribes did well. But they did go, this is what we're struggling with. And I appreciate how they came with a solution in their problem as well. If you don't like it on the east side, if that's not a good land for you, then come join us. You know, just come with us and be a part of us. They listened well to what the 2.5 tribes had to say. They didn't shut them out. They didn't say, I know your reasoning is bad. Whatever you say, I know your true intent. They were willing to listen. And said, okay, that makes sense to me. They considered how, or they seems like they never considered how this altar was actually a good thing. And it was really helpful for them to have an explanation. And they say, this makes sense. So always be ready to listen. Sometimes things are not as they appear to be. And we always do ourselves a favor when you say, go to a person, say, this is what I saw, or this is what happened, can you please help me with this? And then listen. Don't be defensive or attack, things of that nature. So look at that 2.5 tribe before the second bell rings on me. How do you think they responded to the allegations, to these accusations? I think so too. They were accused, you rebelled against the Lord, you're serving other gods, and they didn't get defensive and attack them. Well, how could you think of such, you know, we would do such a thing, and you just kind of boil over. They said, okay, we listened, and they agreed with the 9.5 tribes, right? They said, if that's what we were doing, let the Lord take care of us. And don't try to save us because we don't deserve to live if that's what we're doing. So again, it's really helpful to see both sides And then they explain, this is why we built the altar. So this is actually a point of uniting where it could have been dividing. Miss Callie, I've been talking too much. Good. Good. All right. Well, the second bell's rung. Good class. Thank you for your good comments. Really helpful things, I think, to think about. And always be ready to listen. We need to care for those who are going astray. We need to leave the 99, go after the one, and do so in a spirit of gentleness, ready to listen. All right. Well, I've talked long enough. Thank you.